still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be.
Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still.
Be.
Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Still and know, be still, be.
First, I would like to offer a prayer. And may this be a prayer of thanksgiving and gratitude. Gratitude and thanksgiving for the journey that we are about to complete. For the new friends and acquaintances that we have acquired, for the outstanding presentations that we have seen and heard, for the tools of wisdom that we have acquired. May we each go forth into our own inward journey, enriched by our shared focus on the wisdom way of knowing. Let it be. Amen. And now it is my distinct privilege to introduce our speaker this morning. You know, we have wonderful steering committee, and Pat is a wonderful member of the steering committee. So she's one of us. We're offering our wonderful speaker right from the steering committee. We have been taking this journey for 10 weeks of wisdom, but Pat McClure has been doing this wisdom journey for a long time. That's why she's so eminently qualified to be the speaker this morning. Back in 2005, Pat was already into this Cynthia Bourgeau Wisdom School. She organized a 5-day retreat at the All Saints by the Sea Church to impart this wisdom journey to the members of the All Saints Church. She's eminently qualified to close our presentation of Cynthia Bourgeau's Wisdom Way of Knowing. Pat, I have already sent out the bio, your wonderful bio, to everybody. They've already read it, but this was just a little bit to add on to it. All right, there you are, girl. Go ahead.
Thank you for those kind words, Judith. And I think we have a blessing perhaps to add to the morning.
Yes, we do. I'll play that right now.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you.
I love that song, Blessing. I love to sing it, and I love to receive it. Well, at the very end of Cynthia's book, there is a magical story about a musical masterpiece created in Aspen, a mighty choral work in which Cynthia had the privilege of singing. My task this morning is to use those last pages of The Wisdom Way of Knowing to sum up the teachings of the book and to introduce a final wisdom practice. So I'd like to lead in with the tail end of chapter 8, 2 pages before the epilogue begins. This is where Cynthia explains something about acquiring wisdom. Our isolated intellect by itself can't grasp it. Wisdom becomes available when we nurture our capacity for insight and utilize the body's intelligence. Paraphrasing Cynthia's words there, A student of the Wisdom Way doesn't need paper and pencil and a seat at the front of the class. A wisdom student must bring two qualities to the task, insight and mettle. That's what the dictionary tells us about these two qualities. Insight means the ability to apprehend truth that arises from within us. And mettle is an oath to follow where the inner truth of the insight may lead. When insights arise, we somehow know they're important. Perhaps it's our soul signaling that this message needs to be known and worked out in our daily living. Whatever its mechanism, wisdom teaching tells us that what erupts out of our own deep inner being is as important a guide as any outside authority or teacher. One of the first steps toward wisdom is learning how to tune in to our own authentic stirrings of interest. When something in us is drawn to an idea that's just been expressed or something that's just happened, pay attention to it. Try to pull it out into the day, light of day, and see what it's telling you. That, of course, is what we always hope is happening in our breakout groups. There are less a chance to make comments and more to give members an opportunity to sense what comes alive in them in response to the ideas of the morning. If we can learn to hear or sense a stirring of response within ourselves and give it some air by acknowledging it aloud, then we've started to nurture the capacity for insight that Cynthia notes is a requirement for wisdom. Learning to listen for our inner prompts and insights takes discipline and energy and purpose, that mettle that Cynthia is talking about. Doing the work isn't dramatic, is not going to make the evening news. It's a lot like the Buddhist phrase, chop water, chop wood, carry water, chop wood, carry water, over and over, day by day, just doing what we can, where we are, holding to the faith that we're following what's been given us to do. And then suddenly, it makes new sense. We see it all from a new perspective that changes the way we thought things worked. Our consciousness has added another bandwidth that enables us to see and live more fully into the life that's been given us. What emerges from that way of working looks a lot like creativity. And indeed, a story about the creativity of wisdom is the way that Cynthia concludes the book. It's the story of how Aspen found its voice. It stars Ray Vincent Adams, the longtime conductor of the Aspen Choral Society, as he composed and conducted his choral masterpiece on the Book of Revelation. A remarkable musician and choral director himself, Ray came out of a dark period of depression and addiction with a burning insight that he must compose sacred choral music himself, though he had no formal training in composition. Nevertheless, he threw his energies into gear, using what was available and maintaining a steady line of prayer with God. He began to compose original choral works. With many starts, stumbles, and stops, lots of surrendering the whole thing to God, he produced a series. I looked on YouTube to see if I could find an excerpt of that concert, and I found it and listened to it as I was writing some of the script. It is marvelous music. Well, in the spring of 2001, another insight led Ray to focus on translating the Book of Revelations into sacred song. For 4 months, he struggled, prayed, composed, stalled out, gave it to God, and then returned to find another harmonic piece settling in. Then back to more dead ends, more prayer, more forest walking, more music. The world premiere deadline was approaching, and Adams made it just under the wire. A full score was ready for the Choral Society's first rehearsal on September 9th, 2001. They heard a living musical stream of song capping the light and landscape of Aspen spirit in counterpoint to the rough realities of the cultural strife that was circling through the time that he was composing. The rehearsal of the chorale stunned and elevated everyone who sang or heard it. The concert became a dynamic, heart-lifting response to the cataclysm that erupted in New York City 2 days later on 9/11. With uncanny timing, Ray Adams' musical creativity delivered a harmonic correction to a world going wrong. My takeaway from Cynthia's epilogue is that the wisdom path is innately creative, always giving rise to new understanding and doing. In my graduate years at Stanford, we were fixated on discovering what was really going on in the process of creativity and in the brains of the creators. Within about another 5 years, the verdict was in, and there was widespread consensus that no matter what the medium or field that the creation came out of, everyone went through the same sequence. The first step begins with that burning insight or quest that arises inside us. It can't be denied. We're compelled to embark on it. The second step is doing something about it, gathering all the materials, the energy, and information that's needed to bring the burning intention into being. It involves lots of trial and error, frustration, stalling out, hitting the wall, because our level of consciousness doesn't have the wherewithal to answer a burning need for something new with anything but a repeat of what it already knows. Eventually, in this process, there's just nowhere else to go, as John Draper put it so clearly 3 weeks ago. So the third step is to let go of the whole thing, release it, surrender it completely. Surrender seems to open up a gap in our consciousness so that we become available to the workings of a higher knowing whose vibrant order fulfills the weaker signal that called for it. And then Eureka, the fourth step, a truly new form of that which we've been seeking. The fifth and final step is the hard work of translating the gift into the form that the world can use. The wisdom path follows a rather similar trajectory. And while creativity like Ray Adams is a sometime thing, wisdom work is a 24/7 path. The spiritual practices we learn are designed to become our staff of life, to help us shift out of our habitual awareness so that we come into sync with a higher order consciousness that constitutes the goal of the wisdom path. To my mind, prayer and meditation are daily practices that represent a condensed form of the creative process. We bring our needs and ordinary awareness to the presence of God, recognizing that our abilities are unequal to what's needed, surrendering it all to God, and then just letting it marinate in silence, entering the gap between two orders of consciousness, open and available to the presence of a deeper order. Even just a brush with that order stays with us afterwards in, well, lowered blood pressure and a clearer mind. Therefore, there is one more practice that I think should be included in this little primer on the wisdom way, because it takes us directly to that gap, that leap of knowing that is the core of the creative and wisdom process. Mystics call it seeing with the eye of the heart. Neuroscientists and the folks at HeartMath Institute call it heart coherence. Many of you will be familiar with the concepts because we spent an entire fall series on the intelligence of the heart 4 years ago, benefiting from the speakers, the research, and the technologies of the HeartMath Institute. In order to understand heart coherence and its place on the wisdom pathway, let's take a little tour of the anatomy of wisdom. A famous saying of Saint Theophane the Recluse is often cited to describe seeing with the heart. Let the mind descend into the heart and stand there with the Lord, ever present, all seeing within you. We all thought this was just a great metaphor to encourage the development of inner work until the 1990s, when neuroscience discovered that the heart was also a brain, threaded with one-third the number of neurons that the neocortex operates on. It turns out that the heart is far more than the master pump and the rhythm keeper of the body. It is also a generator of electromagnetic energy, wafting out a 5-watt wave of energy with every beat. The heart's frequencies form an invisible but measurable field of electromagnetic, it's called EM for short, EM energy, that spreads out around the whole body. It's shaped like a torus and extends about 3 feet out and around us. And then the second energy field extends about 15 feet out and around us. Similar studies reveal that our abdomen is laced with brain neurons, ditto the soles of our feet, the palms of our hands. It leads us to consider the possibility that Einstein's great eureka, that famous E equals MC2, where matter and energy are just variants of the same reality, that this is a description of our own body. We are beings made out of electromagnetic frequencies of pure energy. Brain, body, heart, all made of vibrating currents of energy. Now, many of us have had an EKG, that electrocardiogram that reads energetic information carried in our heartbeats. The report comes on a strip of paper showing a line that undulates continuously, kind of like a stock market graph. One of its versions shows our variable heart rate. When we are anxious or stressed or angry, the graph line looks like a spiky mountain range, goes like this. When we are feeling calm and safe and peaceful, it looks more like sand dunes, like that. Many have also had an EEG, an electroencephalogram that measures brain waves, alpha, gamma, beta, etc. In everyday settings, the readouts of the heart and the brain have very different profiles, but there is a way of focusing our mind and our breathing that brings the wave behavior of the heart and the brain into alignment. And when that happens, human consciousness expands exponentially. The term for those even matching wavelengths is coherence. The peaks and troughs of the measurement are equally distant from the midline. When the heart rate frequencies move into those even wavelengths of coherence, they naturally attract and entrain the brain's waves to a matching pattern, because the frequency of the heart is higher than that of the brain. You can actually see it when you put an EKG and an EEG chart above one another. The vibrating waves have evened out and they mimic each other like twin sine waves. My sagging iPad up a little. When that entrainment occurs, the structures of the brain's superb thinking and meaning-making open to streams of information that it's seldom able to receive from the body and the heart's EM fields. Because in our normal state of consciousness, our thinking cortex is largely devoted to strategizing for the survival programs of the reptilian and social brains that are wrapped underneath it. But when the heart moves into a state of coherence, it draws the brain's operation into the same pattern. And that entrained coherence creates a unity and integration of mind, body, and spirit. My guess is that this is a non-theological way of saying what Saint Theophane was talking about when he urged us to let the mind descend into the heart. So just as we practice chanting and Lectio Divina together to get an experiential sense of wisdom teaching, this morning we're going to do a 5-minute practice of coherence as a 21st century version of seeing through the eye of the heart. It begins with focusing our attention on the middle of our chest and breathing slowly in and out. So settle back. Let's begin with moving into a comfortable posture, closing our eyes and slowing down inside enough to sense the energy pulsing in the soles of our feet. Take a deep breath and see if you can feel just that little shimmer of energy on the soles of your feet. Keep breathing deeply and slowly and feel the palms of your hands. Can you sense that energy shimmering just in the palms of your hands? More slow, deep breathing and sense into your shoulders. Feel them, feel into them, and then relax them. In this relaxed posture, settle your breathing into a slow in and out rhythm. Breathe in for a count of five and out for a count of five. I'll try to set the cadence for you so that you can follow it on your own. So we go in, two, three, four, five, and out, two, three, four, five. And in, two, three, four, five, and out, two, three, four, five. Continue that slow breathing pattern, and I'll continue the instruction. As you focus your attention on the middle of your chest, breathe slowly through your heart. Imagine that your breath is moving through your heart in and then out through your heart again. You might want to place a hand over your heart as you're breathing through it and out through it. Hold your hand there. And while doing this, focus on a positive feeling or attitude. Think of a person or an animal you just love. Or feel appreciation or gratitude for something wonderful that has just happened. Deepen your awareness now to actually experience this feeling, till you're feeling it actually somewhere in your body and sensing it emotionally in your heart. Reach for a felt sense of this feeling. Now continue the breathing pattern, keeping it in your heart space. When we sustain that feeling of caring and gratefulness in our heart space and breathe slowly in a regular rhythm, the body switches over to the running of the parasympathetic system, the system that keeps things going while we're sleeping. In that state, the body mind assumes that it's absolutely safe, and the daytime awareness of the thinking brain that we're using right now doesn't have to be spent managing the social and physical survival responses of our stressed systems. Now its gates are open to the vast flow of information that is vibrating and resonating with each heartbeat, and the brain has the awareness and capacity to make new meaning and action out of it. Heart coherence creates a state of unity and integration of mind, body, and spirit. And we see the wholeness of our reality through the eye of our heart. Well, I hope this gives you a gist of the practice. Heart coherence can become the entry point for our daily meditative practice. It can become the foundation of our daily spiritual work. It can become our go-to when problems arise and we need our gathered intelligence to answer them. For many, it becomes a baseline practice for bodily health. Canadian physician Dr. David O'Hare trains his patients to take timeouts every day for a 5-minute practice of moving into the state of heart coherence so that their whole physical system moves into optimal health. The image that best portrays the effects of heart coherence is a painting from our colonial past, Edward Hicks's Peaceable Kingdom. Some of you may know it. Tim, I wonder if you could put that painting up for us so we can see it.
Sure thing.
It's a riverside landscape where a cluster of animals and children are hanging out together. It shows a very alert lion and leopard sitting up straight beside reclining lambs, foxes, dogs, with interested cattle stretching their necks and peering around at it all. In the midst of the contented wildlife are three children playing, and in the background, a group of adults, red-coated gentlemen standing amicably in a meeting with four Indian chiefs against the backdrop of a calm river and a sunny sky. All the elements and creatures display the fruits of coherence, and everything is in an agreement of calmness, good humor, and peaceability. That cooperative equanimity is a colonial version of what St. Paul would call the fruits of the Spirit. His list included faithfulness, self-control, patience, goodness, joy, kindness, peace, and love, all characteristic of a unified heart state. Thanks, Tim. Well, the takeaway for us as fledgling students of the wisdom path is that when we're in a coherent state, its dynamic pulls things into positive working relationship, physically within the body, emotionally within the psyche, and spiritually with the divine. And it broadcasts that equanimity through the EM fields outside the body, subtly affecting the world around us. St. Paul put it this way: for those who love God, all things work together for good. Now, the thing that's come to intrigue me most about all this touches on another outcome of heart coherence, not exactly a fruit of the Spirit, more a phenomenology of coherence. It has to do with the occurrence of coincidences. The one thing I'd heard about coincidence was a quote from Bishop William Temple, who said, "When I pray, coincidences happen. When I don't, they don't." But there is now actual mathematical proof of Temple's quote, plus a boatload of personal stories about prayer, coherence, and coincidence. And I'd like to tell you one of the personal stories. The characters in the tale are two sisters, great friends, and deeply engaged in each other's lives. Their names are Sally and Pat. Yes, my sister and me. The action takes place in 2016, just after Trump was elected. My sister and I had run a family compound for 27 years and had a lot of experience living successfully beside each other. But we had very real differences to live with. Her wing of the compound listened to Rush Limbaugh and Fox News. And while my wing listened to NPR. So our shared life through that election was lived very carefully and with some tensions. However, we both shared a common passion, college women's basketball. And a couple of weekends after the election found us driving from Santa Barbara to UC Davis near Sacramento to cheer on our UCSB team as it played the Davis team. Our conversations on the drive north were carefully chosen and still a little tense, but watching the game rev up in the gym released our inhibitions and we were on our feet cheering the team it was a close match, although I think we may have lost by 2 points, but it didn't really matter. It had been so heartfully played and with such strong examples of good sportsmanship. And we talked all the way to our motel about applying that model to our national politics. Our drive back to Santa Barbara was filled with the feeling of our recaptured unity, a kind of fruits of the spirit sensation. Peaceful, humorous, and enthralled with the landscape that we had chosen to drive through on our route home. A drive through the Hunter Liggett Preserve that still looks like California did 100 years ago, up over the crest of the Santa Lucia Mountains, and down to meet the Big Sur Highway, and then tour a little between Nepenthe and Ragged Point. We pulled out onto a vista point just before dropping all the way down to Lucia and found ourselves in a friendly chat with a young Frenchman in a bright red jacket on a motorcycle, heading north the way we just come down. And as we joined the Big Sur Highway going north ourselves, we noted that the car ahead of us was about as bright a red as the Frenchman's jacket. And then another red car shot past us heading south, and then so did another one. And 3 cars later, another one and another one. Then we drove into the Coast Gallery parking lot to check out the art and saw that out of the 4 cars parked in the parking lot, 2 of them were red. Next, we headed for Nepenthe, and in their big parking lot, saw an unusually large percentage of red cars parked all over the lot. It was like looking at a landscape sprinkled with little bright ladybugs. Coming out an hour later, a different batch of cars with about the same high percentage of red ones. By the time we were headed south to Ragged Point, we were counting the red cars that were zooming past. And of course, there was a red car following right behind us. Pulling into the Raggedy Point park lot, I said, if God is trying to tell us something, there's going to be a red car in this parking lot. We looked over the lot, not a red one in the bunch. So I went to sign in, and when I walked back to our car, there was a red car parked right at the driver's side of ours. Well, that rare, deeply shared day in which all the circumstances seemed to pull into agreement around us produced an additional gift with a quixotic, unrelated serial encounter with red cars. This felt somehow related to how deeply we had engaged and treasured each other and every other element on that long drive. When I look back on it now, the only things I can think that really connected it for me were that as I was beginning to have my first big insights, I would write them down on pieces of paper and save them because they felt so significant. And I kept them all in a big red envelope because for me, red is a sacred color. And of course, the whole wonderful day for us was made possible by a car. Carl Jung coined the phrase synchronicity in the middle of the last century, not because he was a mystic, but because after years of working with patients and bearing witness to the events of his own life, it became clear that there appeared to be a mysterious underlying field affecting a whole different level of experience. After observing synchronicity at work for a few years now myself, I call it the phenomenology or fruit of heart and brain coherence. That experience of working oneness allows us to be permeated, even if only for a moment, with a deeper order of being that blesses every aspect of us that's made available to it. But it's never an encapsulated experience that belongs only to us. It is made of energetic frequencies that are resonating and vibrating and radiating those wavelengths into fields of energy around us and on beyond us. This coherence operates as a tide of being that raises everything related to it. We are all touched by it. And sometimes strings of synchronistic phenomena dance around to celebrate its reality. In our world of increasing chaos, spiritual practices that draw us into coherence literally make a difference in the world around us. The great physicist who put chaos theory on the map, Nobel laureate Ilya Prigozhin, worked mathematically and subatomically with the existence of chaos at many levels. He found that the principles of chaos are the same, from atomic fields to human endeavor. Listen to his prescription for dealing with chaos with a mind to everything you've just learned about heart coherence. He wrote, "When a complex system is far from equilibrium, small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos have the capacity to shift the entire system to a higher order." That's worth hearing again. When a complex system is far from equilibrium, small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos have the capacity to shift the entire system to a higher order. What comes awake in you when you hear a truth this profound? Well, Cynthia Bourgeault's deceptively small book on the wisdom way of knowing introduces us to the essential truths that lie at the core of all great religious traditions. Reading about them is a little like touching live wires, because so much living energy is generated by putting them into practice. It's the real deal, as my children used to say, and it all lies within the deliberate uses of our own consciousness and heart. So we've wrapped up this important series with some more truth in action teaching. We started by reviewing the wisdom's teaching story of Ray Vincent Adams in Aspen and his spiritual journey with creativity, and concluded with the practice of heart coherence as the entry point to any walk on the wisdom path. The hope of the Word in Life Steering Committee is that you will take what's tugged at your attention or your heart and actually try it out. Make your own life a little spiritual lab and experiment with some of these ideas and practices. And remember Goethe's famous charge, whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it now. Boldness has power, genius, and magic in it. Thank you.
All right, Pat, would you like to read the questions that I just put in the chat to introduce them and send us off to our breakout rooms?
Yes. The two questions are, number one, what has spoken to you especially in this morning's session? What's come alive in you? And number two, what's your takeaway from the whole series? Let's have a good chat. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Pat.